Today's gospel is from John chapter 12, verses 12 through 15 and 20 through 27, as written in the Message. Now, John's gospel tells the Palm Sunday story a little differently from the other gospels. Listen for how Jesus' courage and leadership comes through. These are traits of a good king. The next day, the huge crowd that had arrived for the feast heard that Jesus was entering Jerusalem. They broke off palm branches and went out to meet him, and they cheered, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in God's name! Yes, the King of Israel!" Jesus got a young donkey and rode it, just as the scripture has it. Now there were some Greeks in town who had come up to worship at the feast. They approached Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee. "Sir, we want to see Jesus. Can you help us?" Philip went and told Andrew. Andrew and Philip together told Jesus. Jesus answered, "Time's up. The time has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Listen carefully. Unless a grain of wheat is buried in the ground, dead to the world, it is never any more than a grain of wheat. But if it is buried, it sprouts and reproduces itself many times over. In the same way, anyone who holds on to life just as it is destroys that life. But if you let it go, reckless in your love, you'll have it forever, real and eternal. If any of you wants to serve me, then follow me. Then you'll be where I am, ready to serve at a moment's notice. The Father will honor and reward anyone who serves me. Right now, I am storm-tossed. And what am I going to say? Father, get me out of this? No. This is why I came in the first place. I'll say, Father, put your glory on display. A voice came out of the sky. I have glorified it, and I'll glorify it again. The word of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. Good to see you all after having a few days away, and it's good to be back also. So, we're talking about Jesus as this highly disguised king. Do you know the story about the journalist who went to a really high-caliber black-tie party? It was one of those events that happens in Washington, D.C. all the time where, you know, there's going to be politicians and celebrities and heads of state from around the world. All these people were here. And this journalist is going to stand in the corner of the room, you know, this little glass of champagne, taking in all the incredible celebrities are walking around. And what comes to him from across the room is a very distinguished-looking gentleman holding his own glass of champagne, walks up to the journalist and greets him as if he knows him a little bit, and they start having a little chit-chat. And it's one of those moments. The journalist knew he knows the guy, but what's his name? And from what context, what part of my life do I know this guy? Anybody have those moments? Okay, having just turned 61, I find I'm having more of those moments. Just can't place the context. You know, it happens all the time. You see someone at school or downtown at a shop, and suddenly you see them at Tom's supermarket, and you're wondering, who is that person? So this journalist is thinking, I'll just bide my time, and I'll figure out who this guy is who seems so amiable and talking to me right now. So he does what many of us do. He tries to fake it until he makes it. You know, just keep talking, maybe the name will occur to him. But the longer he talks, it never comes. Who is this guy I'm talking to? Finally, he decides to play his last card. He says to the distinguished gentleman, "So, are you still doing the same old thing?" To which the gentleman paused and gave him kind of a quizzical look, smiled a little bit, and said, "Yes, I'm still the king of my country." Oh, I love that little story. Because it tells how sometimes we miss seeing the value in the person who's standing in front of us. As Christians, are people intrigued with the Christian faith? We recognize, or we're familiar with this idea that Jesus comes to us as a king who's often disguised. Now, I brought along an image from another contemporary movie that I rather like. You know, Lord of the Rings. I'm quite a Lord of the Rings fan. And what we're seeing here is Aragorn. Aragorn is who ends up being the king recognized in the end. And Aragorn, you don't know he's the king for much of the movie. He kind of seems to be like a mercenary. He kind of hides in shadows, and he ends up being a great warrior. But over time, you realize that his father died, having never explained the destiny to him when he was a boy. His widowed mother raises him, and he's never really told what is this great heritage that awaits him, until finally someone does tell him who he is. And in great Hollywood fashion, he defeats the Dark Lord in battle, and in the end, he wins the princess's hand and marries her before the end, right? Kind of predictable there. But in my reading this week, I came upon all these stories, really from many cultures, about a king who chooses to be in disguise. Soren Kierkegaard tells a great one. All of them are about a king who is so concerned about his people that he chooses to dress up in peasant garb and slip out the back door of the castle just to walk around the village and be able to see who his people are, not simply as subjects of the king, but appreciate they have full lives. What are their struggles? What are their joys? I think a mark of a good king is to see value in everyone in your circle of influence. The idea is really very simple when you think of Jesus showing up as a king in disguise. It's that we are to train ourselves over life to try our best to see the person standing in front of us as Jesus in disguise. I want to say that again because I think that is a unique attribute of the Christian faith that not all world faiths talk about. The person who is the founder and center of our faith, we are to see the image of that one in everyone we encounter. It really comes out of a story Jesus told in Matthew 25 when he gathered his students, his disciples. He said, I need to tell you folks that the way God ultimately is going to judge your life is by whether you have been able to see deep, deep value in people who are around you. It's like Jesus says, if I were in jail and you came to visit me, or when I was thirsty, did you give me a drink, or hungry and feed me, and on. You, many of us, have read that story. Because in the end, the way you treat even the least of my sisters and brothers means it was the way you were treating me. Wow, that's our work as people of the faith. The story for today is of Jesus 5 days before he dies. Tom, let's bring up that image there. I want you to appreciate this. I think this is a great image for a king in disguise. But I want you to appreciate what Jesus must have been thinking that day. 5 days before he's going to die. Oh, he might not know the exact moment, but many scholars agree that when Jesus, who had been in kind of the outskirts of the Roman Empire, Galilee, where he wasn't under much threat of people finding him out, but when he comes into the great city of Jerusalem, that's where he knows he's going to face the music. And people who have not liked him at all are going to conspire. He knows it's coming. So this is kind of an odd hypothetical question, but how would you be if you knew you were going to die next Friday in 5 days? That whether it was by, you know, you'd have this great strong premonition by a car accident or the heart attack or cancer. Somehow you were given that knowledge that you knew you were going to die in 5 days. How would it affect you today? You know, if you're like me, I think I would be very preoccupied with that information. I'd probably have trouble keeping a normal conversation going with somebody else. It would greatly distract me, wouldn't it, you? Would you have the ability to be philosophical about death and kind of think about it as the big picture? I don't know if I would. But we see in the story today, Jesus seems to have a kind of philosophical view of his death that's coming up. Not that he's uncaring or detached from it. He's just reflecting on it in a different way. The story for today happens in the city of Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is one of the great holy cities of the world. And it has been regarded as that for more than 3,000 years by at least three monotheistic faiths, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And for what was happening in today's story, it was a huge gathering of people. The Hebrew people, not to mention all the other ethnic groups that always filled the city gates, but they were gathering around the festival of Passover. And that's the time, if you don't know, for faithful Jews around the world, they gather to remember that God is a God of liberation, and he freed them from Pharaoh's enslaving hand so that they could leave, go across the Red Sea, and search for their promised land and start a new life together. That's what Passover is about. It's about that celebration. And good Jews know that when they are considering their own liberation, they are to also think about helping other people who are oppressed. That's part of their acknowledgement of the holiday. So Jews, if they could in their life at least once, you go to Jerusalem, the big holy city, for the festivities, for the feast. There were thought to be more than 100,000 people who would have gathered on this week. Now, can you imagine 100,000 people packing into Traverse City? Of course you can. It happens every July. Cherry Festival. They're packed all up and down downtown. You just thought you were going to drive across town in your car, but no. They're all up and down the bay shore. They're in hundreds of boats waiting for the jets to fly over. Think of that. That's kind of what today's carnival atmosphere would have been like in Jerusalem. So into this wild mass of humanity, there were a couple of Greeks in the crowd who found themselves close to Jesus' disciples and where Jesus was, enough to be overhearing what they were saying. These Greek travelers came up and listened to the conversation of the disciples, and they heard one disciple in particular speaking with a Greek accent. Hey, I kind of recognize that, they would have thought, these foreigners. So they must have thought, this guy speaks Greek. Maybe he's one of us. And so they approached Philip, and they learned that he's a disciple of the great healer teacher, Jesus of Nazareth. They've heard about him. And they say, hey, can we see this Jesus? You know, that's really a frequent question in the Bible. Especially it's the way the Gospel of John often tells stories about people who are interested in Jesus. Can we see this Jesus? So Philip goes and tells Andrew, and the two of them go and they find Jesus over a little ways over and say, hey, Jesus, got a couple of Greek guys over here. They'd really like to meet you. What do you think? Well, you think Jesus would have given a direct reply of either I don't have time or sure, where are they or what do you need? But he doesn't. See, Jesus was distracted. Remember, it's 5 days before he's going to die. He's preoccupied, and he says this to them. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it will remain a single seed. But if it dies, it'll produce many grains of wheat. For whoever seeks to find their life must lose it. And whoever loses their life will end up finding it. If anyone would serve me, they must follow me. They must not hold on to their life at all cost, but let it go so that they can end up having a life forever. Now that is a weird answer, don't you think? That's a very weird answer. All the Greeks really wanted to do was see Jesus. They knew he was kind of a rock star, maybe get him to sign their paper. But Jesus is preoccupied. He's trying to get his mind around what this approaching week is going to ask of him. But you know, maybe there is a connection here between the Greeks asking to see him, and what he's getting around to talking about. Because maybe there is a connection between if you're going to see actually who this Jesus presence is sent by God into the world, it's going to call into question what you think is valuable to live for and die for. You can almost see Jesus' words. You know, Jesus was this master storyteller. He knew how to create a picture that drew people in. And this story we're talking about today is so very visual. And if anyone here is one of those people who has seed catalogs, Roger, I know you're up there looking at your seed catalogs, just anticipating the flowers are going to be here in a couple of months, this has got to speak to you too. This was a great agricultural image he had here. Listen to it again. If a seed is planted in the ground and it does not die, it just stays the seed, that's all it's ever going to remain. But if it falls apart, what the world would think dies, it actually produces many seeds and seedlings. And those seeds and seedlings produce so much fruit. It's a really visual image, isn't it? And it all begins because the seed, as it is in the current form, has to let go of itself. He's taking the long view here. I really want you to try and appreciate what Jesus is doing is not being at the tyranny of the urgent. He's not acting all afraid because something is going to be a problem in the short term. He is tapping this capacity in himself to look at the long view. And I think this is so very important. This is, you know, as we talk about Jesus having the qualities of a king, of royalty, I really think this is part of the aspect of what a good king can do, or a queen for that matter, of looking at the big picture. I think we in this room, if you were to think of someone in your life who you would consider wise, who you would go to for their advice, they probably have this capacity to take a long view. I think that's what Jesus did. And really, I think part of the takeaway for you and me today is we see this capacity in him. I believe that across our life, we are to grow in this ability to see the long view. I think sometimes our elders are giving the rest of us a great gift when they have this ability to not get caught up in the frustration of the moment, but be able to speak for something in the long term. Now, I really don't mean to be morbid here, talking about death for Jesus coming up so imminently. For I believe that Jesus is being the king in disguise here. He may not be wearing a flashy robe or a crown that matches, but he does have a king's eye and a king's wisdom that's showing up, and it's got to be one of the most stressful days of his life. He aims toward the good and the difficult goal on behalf of others. And from that, he will not be distracted. He is so centered on knowing what he's about. He's a good king because he acts on behalf of those under his reign. And friends, that includes you and me in this room. Even if it does require a bit of suffering along the way, he's going to hold a very high bar. So when some Greeks come along to Jerusalem, to the feast of the Passover, and they catch Philip and they ask to see Jesus, it's really the same thing that happens to a lot of people in the Gospels who happen upon Jesus. People have this real short-sighted view of him. You know, they kind of see him as a celebrity rock star. You know, can I get your autograph? They're more likely wanting to be just admirers than followers. And I admit that some days that's more where I am. How about you? This is why when word about these curious Greeks show up to Jesus, He's really not that interested in meeting them or having time with them. Not to be rude, he's just got these other things on his mind. Still, and I really appreciate this about this story, we've never heard in the Gospels up until now that someone of Greek lineage comes seeking Jesus. To Jesus, it must have meant, finally, my message is getting out there. You know, Jesus was sent primarily to try and make a connection with Jews of Israel. But here there's a sign that it's penetrating outside to the Mediterranean world at large. And what happens when Jesus hears this? He must have thought, yes, other people will know what I came for. And that's when he says, it is now time. It's time for God's glory to be revealed in this terrible week with great hope that we're about to step into. You know, we know that here in the church, the church emphasizes a season of Lent. You know, we've been talking about it these last several weeks. It's 6.5 weeks that lead us up until Easter. Now, you might have noticed, maybe you've tried as well to maybe let go of an indulgence, or maybe to try to be a little more generous than usual, or whatever you've had to do to remind yourself, like I've tried to do, that I'm not really the center of the universe. I really need to pay attention to something bigger than me. All those are acts of faith in Lent. So do we just do it because the church here says that? And I've come to believe when I'm reading this story today, I think we need these 6 weeks of Lent just to slow down a little bit and try and look at what's really important in order to make room for our minds to appreciate this different way Jesus is being king. He does. He's a king by how he's serving others, by how he's giving himself away. He's king by this crazy experience that happens a little later this week in his last meal with his disciples, when he tucks his robe into his belt and has a towel and kneels down and washes feet, which we might think that's just so very bizarre today, but that would have been a task of any reputable house in the Middle East back in the day, but would have been done by the lowly servant of the house to wash your feet. And Jesus does it saying, this is what it means in my way. You serve other people. You elevate their value. Several years ago, Victoria Ruvulo was voted the most inspiring person of the year by BeliefNet, which is an online faith community. Something you need to appreciate about Victoria Ruvulo is there was a group of teenage boys that were having a wild night together. Somehow they got somebody's car and they stole somebody's credit card and they went and bought several things from a market. One of the things they bought was a large frozen turkey. And it's what they thought would be great fun. They were riding down through the streets of their city. And at the prompting of one of them, a boy named Ryan opened the window and threw this large frozen turkey out the window into the path of oncoming traffic. And it bashed through a windshield into the face of Victoria Ruvulo and completely damaged and imploded her face. Miraculously, the person riding next to her was able to take her foot off the accelerator and steer the wheel off to the side of the road where the car finally stopped. She survived, but it required more than 10 hours of reconstructive surgery and leaving a trach tube in. Now, several months pass. The boy, Ryan, has been incarcerated and found out. Charges have been brought. And it's now several months later in his court date, and Victoria Ruvulo makes a point of showing up at the sentencing. And to everyone's surprise, she asks the judge if he would be lenient toward this young man. She says, "Each day I thank God simply because I'm alive. I sincerely hope you have learned from this awful experience, Ryan. There is no room in my life for vengeance now." Well, young Ryan weeps openly. It was a very dramatic day in that courtroom. And he expresses remorse, not just on that day, but several ways later. And he ends up being sentenced to 6 months in prison and not the 25 years in prison that the judge could have levied against him. That day, Victoria went on to tell Ryan this: "I truly hope that by demonstrating compassion and leniency, I have encouraged you to seek an honorable life. And if my generosity will help you mature into a responsible, honest man, whose graciousness is a source of pride to your loved ones and your community, then I will be gratified, and my suffering will not have been in vain. Ryan, prove me right." End of quote. And I did a little research this week to look a little more of what happened to this Ryan in this incident. You can look it up too. And I learned that he did go on with his life, and he was able to enter a career path and support himself and be a person of moral character to those around him. I want to point out, he's also a taxpayer now. Rather than sitting in a jail for 25 years, only at taxpayer's expense. Can you see it? Victoria Ruvulo was channeling the power of the king in what she was able to do here, even in the midst of her suffering. This is what Jesus the Christ is about today. For the king takes the long view, regardless of what it costs him, and he uses all of his influence in ways that will benefit the greater good of others. How does he say it? "For unless a grain of wheat is buried in the ground, dead to the world as you know it, it's never going to be any more than that grain of wheat. But if it's buried and allows itself to transform, it sprouts and reproduces many times over." In the same way, if anyone who holds on to life just as it is and never changes, their life will ultimately be destroyed. But if you let go, if you live reckless in your love and your thirst for justice and mercy, you'll have it forever, real. Friends, this is what we are to ponder as we enter Holy Week. Amen.